From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Well, the past few days, NATO has really pummeled cities all across Yugoslavia, flying more than 600 sorties on several days, and they've actually admitted that they've hit less than half of their targets. And what they've really honed in on this past weekend, and certainly last night, is knocking out electricity in the three largest cities in Yugoslavia.
Pacifica's Jeremy Scahill reports from Belgrade. Also, the trade war over genetically engineered food, and listeners call in from around the country about what they're doing about the bombing of Yugoslavia. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. NATO missile attacks plunge much of Yugoslavia into darkness and seriously threatened water supplies. This, according to local media today, officials at NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium, said Alliance aircraft flew 554 bombing raids overnight despite poor weather. Targets included power plants, ammunition dumps, and broadcast relay stations. In Serbia, 15 NATO bombs hit water pumps for the second night in a row. Earlier strikes left at least 10,000 people without water. This, again, according to Serb media. Belgrade was down to its last 10% of water reserves because of damaged pumping stations and a power outage, which cut electricity to the few water pumps still working. Two destructive missiles targeted a power plant, that destructive in quotes, 20 miles east of Belgrade. Transformer stations in Novi Sad and Niš, Yugoslavia's second and third largest cities, were also hit and set ablaze. This according to the independent Beta News agency. Serbian television said one person was wounded in Niš. Russia's special envoy for the crisis, Viktor Chernomyrdin, plan to fly to Belgrade on Wednesday or Thursday to continue talks aimed at a diplomatic solution to the crisis. Chernomyrdin, who's been mediating between NATO and Yugoslavia with little success so far, will be accompanied by Finnish President Matti Ahtisaari. The NATO strikes against Yugoslavia and resulting tensions with Russia and China have created serious new threats to nuclear arms reduction measures and other global arms control efforts, many of which were already faltering, according to policymakers and specialists interviewed by The Washington Post this weekend. Russia's anger over the assault on Yugoslavia has created complications with the United States that jeopardize the long-delayed Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, known as START II, which aims at slashing both countries' long-range nuclear weapons. Also at risk are efforts to control the thousands of short-range or tactical nuclear weapons that were never covered by a treaty. According to the Washington Post, the worsening in U.S.-Russian relations threatens the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, efforts to halt the spread of weapons of mass destruction, revisions on a treaty on troops and conventional arms in Europe, and plans for joint early warning cooperation to avoid an accidental missile attack. The first major casualty of the NATO strikes was the START II Strategic Arms Treaty signed in 1993 by Presidents Bush and Boris Yeltsin and ratified by the Senate in 1996, but never ratified by the Russian State Duma, the lower house of parliament. The treaty was close to approval before the bombing of Yugoslavia. Human rights situation in East Timor has deteriorated so drastically in recent months that it's now comparable to the years immediately following the Indonesian invasion in 1975. In its latest assessment, the Dili-based Foundation for Legal and Human Rights, known as Yayasan Hak, which is based in the capital of East Timor, said attacks by militias created and armed by Indonesia had brought to East Timor an atmosphere of fear not seen since the period from 75 to 89, when the violence-wracked territory was closed to foreigners. In their report, they said, quote, every day has been marked with violence, kidnapping, torture, killings, looting, and arson directed towards East Timorese throughout the territory. More than 100 people have been killed or have disappeared in a war being waged by the Indonesian-backed militias against independent supporters. The report claimed that months of intimidation and violence by the militias had tipped the balance in favor of the autonomy lobby in the lead-up to the UN-organized ballot on self-determination, which is scheduled for August 7th. Scientists have discovered a disturbing unintended consequence of genetic engineering. Pollen from a widely planted laboratory-designed strain of corn can kill monarch butterflies. Monarch caterpillars eating milkweed leaves dusted with pollen from the altered corn plants ate less, grew more slowly, died more quickly. After 4 days, 44% of them had died versus none of the caterpillars that didn't feed on the pollen. We'll have more on that later in the show. And finally, this news from the Philippines. About 200 protesters scuffled with riot police outside the U.S. Embassy in Manila today, demonstrating against a pact that would allow large-scale U.S. military exercises in the country. The activists, belonging to the National Democratic Movement, ran past riot police and destroyed a plastic cover protecting the U.S. government's seal at the embassy's entrance. Police pushed them back with shields and truncheons, injuring at least one protester. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. NATO's air war against Yugoslavia went into its third month today, with the alliance admitting that Belgrade, far from withdrawing forces from Kosovo, as the West has demanded, sending fresh troops there. Although U.S. and NATO leaders said the campaign was grinding down Yugoslav President Slobodan Milosevic, the alliance continued to be riven by disputes over to whether to send in ground troops to finish the job. The Clinton administration says a force of 50,000 NATO troops it wants to deploy on Kosovo's borders would only go in after a peace deal with Belgrade. The alliance will debate the plan this week. The issue of ground troops is highly controversial in NATO. The West top envoy in Bosnia, Carl Westendorp, said yesterday they would be needed to get the refugees back home. But the Italian foreign minister, Lamberto Dini, said negotiations were the only way to resolve the conflict. British Foreign Secretary Robin Cook insisted NATO remained united. Cook, just back from a two-day trip to Washington, told the BBC, "I don't know any head of government of the 19 member states who would in any way retreat from our key commitments." NATO Supreme Commander General Wesley Clark said yesterday airstrikes would go on until an agreement was reached and that the alliance had, quote, broadened and deepened its target list. Meanwhile, Newsweek magazine says President Clinton has approved a top-secret plan to destabilize Milosevic using computer hackers to attack his foreign bank accounts and a sabotage campaign to erode his public support. Newsweek, in its May 31st edition, said other NATO allies were not to be told about the secret war. Also in that Newsweek report, President Clinton signing off on a top-secret directive that the CIA would train Kosovar Albanians in sabotage. We turn right now to Jeremy Scahill, Pacifica reporter, who has made it back into Belgrade. And after last night's bombing raids throughout Yugoslavia, he brings us this report.
Well, the past few days, NATO has really pummeled cities all across Yugoslavia, flying more than 600 sorties on several days, and they've actually admitted that they've hit less than half of their targets. And what they've really honed in on this past weekend and certainly last night is knocking out electricity in the three largest cities in Yugoslavia, Belgrade, Novi Sad, and Niš. NATO struck hard at the Yugoslav electricity network, hitting major generating plants, severely disrupting power supplies all across Serbia. Studio B television here here reported last night that shortly after air raid sirens sounded in Belgrade, and this was about 9:50 p.m. local time, that a power plant 40 miles east of Belgrade had been hit. I actually was in the hotel room, and all of a sudden all of the power went out, and you could see across the skyline of Belgrade that power just simultaneously went down. Lights in people's homes went out. All you could see were the few cars that were driving over the bridges and overpasses in the distance. They also hit electrical installations in northern Serbia. They were hit very, very hard, and it's not immediately clear whether they're hitting them with conventional bombs or these so-called soft bombs, a really ill-titled name for these bombs. They're graphite bombs, which explode over targets and cause short circuits in the systems. Earlier Sunday, NATO missiles hit the biggest distribution section of the Nikola Tesla thermal plant, which is 20 miles south of Belgrade, and those strikes came just 24 hours after NATO warplanes targeted another series of power stations, so they're really, really targeting these electrical facilities. And when the latest strikes hit last night, engineers had just managed to restore electricity. In fact, I was talking to someone on the phone who said, oh, we're so happy now we have electricity, and then they were bombed off of, the electricity was bombed again just a short time later. They were able to restore electricity, these engineers, to what they call priority users, hospitals, water facilities, bakeries, and public transportation. But those, again, last night were bombed as well. And I think that it's a stepping up of NATO's campaign of terror against civilians, that when the air raids come on, all of a sudden then you face the reality of being in the dark as well. And there's been heavy, heavy daytime raids over Kosovo as well. But now we're joined right now in Belgrade by a young person, a student who runs a website here in Belgrade. His name is Vojislav Stojković. He's a university student in Belgrade and a webmaster. He runs a site called Under the Gun. And we're just going to ask him to describe why he thinks NATO is targeting electrical facilities in Yugoslavia.
Well, I think that it's all a part of psychological warfare. They want us to suffer. They want us to be scared. It's not only that we have to live in the dark. Also, the refrigerators are not working, the boilers are not working, we cannot wash ourselves, and the worst fear is that we won't be able to feed ourselves, to cook the food, because we don't know for how long the electricity will be gone. We are afraid that it's gone permanently.
Now, Vojislav, you've also talked about how this has affected your ability to get information in the country. Talk a little bit about that, whether it's from television or the Internet.
Well, the interesting issue is that NATO justified bombing of TV station, which took many lives. They justified it by saying that they're doing this for the freedom of speech and freedom of press. In other words, they wanted to pre-orient our audience to CNN and BBC and all other Western media. And anyway, I don't know how they're going to accomplish it when we don't have electricity and we cannot listen to the radio and we cannot look watch TV. So that won't work anyway.
Now, Amy, also from talking to people here in Yugoslavia around Belgrade as well, I think no one in the country really regards this as a war. Rather, it's viewed as 19 countries, among them the most powerful and mightiest in the world, sort of sucker-punching the country, a tiny country of 10 million people. A lot of people that you talk to on the streets say that if NATO forces did invade, that they would go to fight them because they believe right now that this isn't a war. It's not a fair fight. Their cities are being bombed. People are being bombed. Many, many hospitals, many, many schools, bridges. Now they're bombing the electrical facilities. And this country of 10 million people feels that they're just being sucker-punched constantly. And Vojislav Stojković is a young person who's been running this website and has spent a lot of his time getting information out to the rest of the world. And I wanted to ask him, I spoke with him earlier, and he was talking about how one day it just sort of dawned on him that this is his home. Vojislav.
Well, it's pretty scary to think about that, because all of the time I was writing this diary and giving information, writing essays about what NATO is doing, and I just said they did this or they did that for this purpose. And anyway, I was walking through this. I was walking in the streets one day. It was a dull, grim, gray day, and it was raining. And suddenly, I saw once again the ruins of the military headquarters and of Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Internal Affairs, pardon. And it just hit me. It was my country. It was the town, the city I was born in, that I lived in for 20 years, and something was happening to it that could only be seen in black and white movies and read in history books. and it's now it's real. It's here, and it's happening to me.
Now, Voicelov, also, we've done a lot of coverage on Democracy Now! About the environmental impact of the bombing. We've talked about the petrochemical plant that was bombed in Pančevo, and we've also talked about the oil refineries that have been bombed, particularly along the Danube, which is a water source for 10 million people, and now oil is spilling consistently into the Danube. Talk about some of what you've raised, not only about the environmental consequences of the bombings, but also the actual weaponry that's being used, depleted uranium. What do you know about this?
Well, I can tell you that depleted uranium is considered not only radiological but also chemical weapon. It's a really a scary thing to have on our ground, because when the depleted uranium ammunition explodes, it releases very tiny particles of uranium that anyone could breathe in or drink with water, and it gets into the lungs and then into the bloodstream and bone marrow, and anyway, it keeps irradiating the person. We all know about the Gulf War syndrome, and it's really scary to think about that many people will be suffering the same syndrome and this radiation sickness. And especially NATO talks about refugees that have to return. The question that has to be asked is where will they return to to a contaminated area? Are they condemned to suffer the same radiation sickness themselves? That's not really helpful to them.
We're talking with Vojislav Stojković. He's a university student here in Belgrade and a webmaster of a site called Under the Gun. And I think that listeners around the country should know that what we're doing right now is actually very rare. It's rare that you hear from someone on the ground in Yugoslavia who lives under the bombardment of NATO, who has to face the reality that their cities are being destroyed, buildings that they knew and friends that they know are dying. And I think it would be interesting for Vojislav Stojković to talk about what life has been like under NATO bombardment.
Oh, as I said, it didn't seem that real when it started. It took a lot of time to realize that it is happening to us, that it's real, that it's live. And then, since then, the living has been very depressing, scary. We don't know what we are facing. We don't know whether we have any future. We don't know whether one day NATO will decide that they should carpet bomb Belgrade and just devastate all of us. We don't know if we'll be able to feed and bathe and provide medicine for our for my 16-month-old baby brother. And it's really it's awful. It's hard to live under the bombing, but the worst thing is that we don't know what they want. We don't know when it will end. We don't know how it will end. We don't, and we are completely helpless to stop it.
Vojislav, on your website, you deal with also what you call the myths and realities of what's going on. And you did just mention the refugees, the Kosovar Albanian refugees, and what they will face when they come back. The possibility, for example, of dealing with depleted uranium that has been rained down on their land. What is your understanding of the situation the Kosovar Albanians face in terms of the issue of ethnic cleansing?
Well, it's really hard to understand all of that. We get mixed information, and it's difficult to sift through both our propaganda and Western propaganda from the mainstream media. And anyway, my idea, my understanding of the situation is that there wouldn't be half as many refugees if there was no bombing. Nobody is stupid enough to sit in his home and pretend that nothing is happening when the bombs are raining all over the villages and cities in Kosovo. And on the top of all that, those bombs are cluster bombs and depleted uranium and all. Who knows what kind of means of destruction have been devised that we don't know of. And anyway, on top of all that, there are fights and skirmishes between Yugoslav Army and KLA. And if I was one of the Kosovar Albanians, I would be fleeing too, because right now I'm in Belgrade, and it's much safer to witness bombing here than being down there. And I don't think that NATO really helped by this bombing to stop whatever is going on in Kosovo.
We're talking to Vojislav Stojković, who is a 20-year-old University of Belgrade student who keeps a website about what's happening in his country. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We will come back with Vojislav as well as Jeremy Scahill, who too is in Belgrade. Please stay with us. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman as we continue with Democracy Now!'s War and Peace Report, as we have for the last 60 or so days. And we're continuing with our conversation in Belgrade right now with Pacifica's Jeremy Scahill and Vojislav Stojković, who is a young man who maintains a website to let people know around the world about conditions in Belgrade. The United Nations just got into Kosovo, and the leader of the UN mission there said that the ethnic cleansing is far worse than he had imagined, that whole villages have been burned, that the fear within the eyes of Kosovar Albanians who are displaced but not yet out of Kosovo is very chilling and revealing. What does that make you think? Do you believe him when he says that? Now, that isn't about so much fighting. That is about Serb forces going after Kosovo Albanians to get them out of Kosovo.
Well, it's really a tough issue, because we have reports here that KLA is forcibly recruiting men to their army, and also KLA is burning villages and all that. And yet we cannot hear that from Western media, just like the fact that there was awful ethnic cleansing in Bosnia and Croatia, just like that fact was hidden from audience. Only, and there was this picture they painted that only Serbs were ethnic cleansing other nationalities, and there was nothing about those 970,000 of Serbian refugees from that fled to Serbia from Bosnia and Croatia. So I think that all the reports coming from Kosovo, however true they may be, they're very selective. They're not saying anything about what KLA is doing to people, and they're not saying anything about Serbian people being driven from Kosovo, and they are being driven from Kosovo. So they just want to show one side of the story. I'm not defending any actions, any ethnic cleansing or condoning anything like that. But the fact is that I don't believe that the Yugoslav army as a whole did something like that, and I also don't believe that KLA was just fighting for their freedom and didn't commit any crimes or anything like that.
So let me ask you a last question then. And as you said, there's a tremendous amount of propaganda on both sides. Where do you get your information about Kosovo?
I try to get my information from the sources I judge as unbiased, because I can see on the internet some sites have this the information I'm looking for, and they have the habit of distinguishing the information itself from the interpretation, and those are the sites I like to visit. For example, Stratfor is the site that has information, the news, and it has commentary and special reports and all that kind of stuff, but it's separated. They don't mix interpretation with information.
What is Stratfor?
Stratfor is the website that provides news and their analysis, strategic analysis, and special reports, and that's just the website I get information from.
Who puts it out?
It's a U.S. site, but I don't know exactly any names. It's just called Stratfor.
So is your information about Kosovo mainly gotten from the web?
Yeah, well, the internet is the only media I trust now. All the radio stations and TV stations that we could receive here would be full of propaganda, and I'm really tired of listening to propaganda. I want to try and sift the information and find out as much of truth as I can.
How old are you, Vojislav?
I'm 20 years old.
And are you a student?
Yes, I'm a student of university in Belgrade.
Does the university continue to operate now?
There are no classes, but we can take exams, not in big groups, but individual or in pairs or something like that. But the university is still working, but not like before the war. There are no classes, no lessons. We're just taking the exams.
And what made you decide to put together the website you are, that other people can go to? I mean, they can go to it all around the U.S. And see what it is you have to say.
Well, I really started that as a sort of personal relief and emotional outlet. And when I found out that somebody was actually reading that, it turned more and more serious. It became a way to communicate with people outside and to show them that there is the other side of the story, and that's the whole idea. It just started as a simple diary, and now I have many sections there, articles from other sources, essays I wrote about the situation, the diary, the gallery of pictures I could find out about the situation. And I'm trying to. I don't ask for people to believe with everything I say without questioning it. I only want them to give us the benefit of doubt. I want them to try to think about it.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking to us. What is the website? The address.
The address of the website is HTTP CodeMage, that's CodeMage dot home dot DHS dot ORG.
One more time.
CodeMage dot home dot DHS dot ORG.
That was Vojislav Stojković, a university student in Belgrade and a webmaster. He runs a site called Under the Gun. As you know, Amy, Clinton signed off on a directive to train Kosovar Albanians in sabotage. This was reported by Newsweek and then confirmed by the Pentagon. And this is part of a larger picture of psychological operations against people here in Yugoslavia that includes the bombing of the electrical facilities and forcing millions of people into darkness, as well as the propaganda leaflets that NATO planes have been dropping all throughout the country, not not just in Kosovo. But it's interesting that some of the ones that they've been dropping in Kosovo are actually encouraging people to leave, saying that they're going to step up attacks against Serb forces and that Kosovo Albanians shouldn't be there when it happens. I also talked to a young doctor on my way back in here yesterday to Yugoslavia, and she was saying that there are rumors circulating around that some of the leaflets that are being dropped also have microorganisms on them. So there's a very strong suspicion and concern about what NATO's operations are consisting of as far as psychological operations. There are also reports of strange flashes in the sky throughout Yugoslavia, and some people are really, really frightened that weapons are being tested on them and that the meteorological system here is being tampered with by the U.S.-led NATO forces. But just to recap, millions of people were plunged into darkness because of NATO's airstrikes, and it seems like there's no end in sight to terror for people on the ground here.
Jeremy Scahill reporting from Belgrade, Yugoslavia, in Pacifica Radio's special daily reporting from the site of the bombing of Yugoslavia. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Stay with us. Don't do anything. And in this segment of today's program, before we move on to the issue of biotechnology, we're going to bring you listener phone calls that have come in from around the country about what people are doing about the bombing of Yugoslavia.
My name is Greg Giorgio, calling from Altamont, New York. I listen to Democracy Now! On WRPI 91.5 FM in Troy, New York. And just calling to tell everyone that the Voices for Peace are still alive in the Capital District area, among other groups. I'm affiliated with a loose-leaf coalition of supporters against the bombing in Yugoslavia, and we meet and demonstrate every Wednesday in the city of Schenectady at 11 a.m. at the Armed Forces Recruiting Center, and have consistently done that since the first week of April, and we'll be doing so until the bombing stops. So we hope that we can help spur on more individuals to join us and to start their own demonstrations wherever they are. Thanks.
Yeah, this is Karan from Los Angeles. This is calling about Democracy Now! And what I got to say is, who's really doing the ethnic cleansing? Is it Albania or is it the United States? Thank you.
Hi, Amy. Andrew Tonkovich calling from Orange County, California, the land that time forgot, with the Orange County Coalition for Peace, to let you know about some of the things that we've been doing here to challenge the bombings of Iraq and Yugoslavia. Meeting every Saturday from 1 to 3 at vigils across from the largest shopping mall in affluent Orange County called the South Coast Plaza. Last Saturday we had 125 people carrying signs and waving to the passing motorists. Also, at the University of California, Irvine, which is right down the road, we've been showing up at the official pro-NATO, pro-war, pro-U.S. bombing forums and interrupting and challenging their official lineup of speakers. Finally, we've arranged our own forum on Monday night, the 24th, at the University of California, Irvine, with, among others, Richard Becker from the International Action Center. That's being sponsored by our very own Department of Humanities and of Women's Studies. All of this with under the auspices of our newly formed organization in Orange County called the Orange County Coalition for Peace. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Hi, Amy. This is another one of your fans. I think it's a gross mistake to recognize Serbia and Montenegro as the Federated Republic of Yugoslavia. That's gone. That's the former. And, however, I do recognize both of them. If they want to be nation states, I recognize them. But I do not recognize them to be Yugoslavia. That's just empowering them and empowering Milosevic. And I do agree, stop the bombing immediately and negotiate. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Carlos. I live in the Bay Area. I listen to KPFA. And my comment very briefly is that I'm from Latin America. Americans have to realize that they cannot keep bombing other countries when they don't like what's going on there. That those wars will generate a lot of hate in people and will bring the war inside the U.S. as terrorism. I'm frightened of that perspective, but I can see it happening.
Hello, my name is Wendy Panowitz. I'm calling from San Rafael, California, and I listen to Democracy Now! On KPFA. I'm calling to let people know that on Saturday, May 29th, we're going to have a protest of the U.S. bombing of Yugoslavia on the Golden Gate Bridge, and we'll be assembling at 11 o'clock a.m. In Marin, it'll be the pedestrian walkway entrance, or if you're coming from San Francisco, you could meet at the San Francisco pedestrian walkway entrance, and we'll be proceeding to the middle of the bridge in a human chain. Since the bridge authority safety regulations prohibit signs on the bridge, we're encouraging people to wear a paper target sign on their clothing. For more information, call the Emergency Mobilization to Stop the War at 415-821-6545. That's 415-821-6545. Saturday, May 29th, 11 a.m. Bye.
Hi, Amy. This is Teresa Bonpain calling from Los Angeles, California, and I listen to KPFK. We just wanted to tell you that the Peace Center Coalition in Los Angeles, in conjunction with the International Action Center and other organizations, have rallies, demonstrations every Saturday at the Westwood Federal Building from 12 till 2. And every Tuesday night at the Peace Center, we meet to discuss other ways of trying to stop this war. And people can call for more details at the Office of the Americas, 323-852-9808.
My name is Liz Porter, and I live in Tucson, Arizona. I listen to KXCI, and I heard that you wanted comments about what we are doing out here while this war goes on. I am crying a lot, a whole lot. I drive my kids to school, and I cry every day about this war and about the violence that is taking over our world. I drive to work, and I grieve all the wars that have affected my life, World War II that my father fought in, the Korean War that took him away from our family for 2 years when I was a baby, the Vietnam War that I had to watch on television every night of my adolescence. I cry. I grieve all the killing and hatred in this world that I seem powerless to stop. I grieve every day that this war in Europe goes on. I hope that my tears cleanse my soul and therefore help cleanse the soul of this planet. I bought a silver peace sign ring to wear on the middle finger of my left hand next to my wedding band. It has three peace symbols in a row, and I look at it all day, every day. I fiddle with this ring, hoping somehow the symbol will permeate the world and help stop the killing. I listen to Pacifica. I do not own a television. I do not watch the news every day and get numbed out by all the sensationalism, the pro-war mentality of this country. I want to know the real truth. I listen to Pacifica and I read articles such as the one in the May 10th, 99 issue of The New Yorker by Michael Ignatieff, and I write poems. I write anti-war poems and read them to people. Thank you for listening.
And those are some of the comments that have been calling in to to Pacifica Radio over the last few days, letting us know about events. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! If you'd like to call in and let us know what you're doing about the bombing of Yugoslavia, please give us a call and let us know. Our number is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Rather, you could call us. I just gave out the wrong number. It's 212-209-2999. That's 212-209-2999. We're now going to go to one last comment that came in on the comment line that wasn't about the bombing of Yugoslavia, but it was about the issue that we're going to be dealing with next. It's about the whole issue of the foods that we eat. And this call came in from a friend in my high school class that I hadn't heard from in 20 years, calling from Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, and my name is Daniela Oder. And I'm submitting a short comment that you might want to play. I am working with the Campaign for Food Safety. The FDA is currently considering revising the labeling requirements for irradiated foods. Essentially, all foods can legally be irradiated in this country, but a small label is required, so very few are actually irradiated now. One of the FDA's options is to allow all labeling requirements to expire. If they decide to do so, dozens or hundreds of irradiation facilities will be built, and you will have no way of knowing if your food has been irradiated. Producers of irradiated foods will challenge other countries' restrictions under world trade rules. In other words, we will have another genetically engineered food situation on our hands where the consumer will be kept completely in the dark as to what we are eating. If you would like to send a comment to the FDA, do so before May 18th. You can get more information about this from our webpage at purefood.org, or call 213-387-5122, or email doder@hsc.usc.edu.
That, another comment from Pacifica Radio listener calling in about issues they're involved with, and we hope you too will call at 212-209-2999. That's 212-209-2999. When we come back, we take a look at the battle over biotechnology. Stay with us here on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The British government scrambled this week to defend its policy on genetically modified food after a leaked letter suggested it had set up a media unit to put a positive gloss on the controversial biotechnology. Further embarrassment was heaped on the government when another letter from the government's top scientist appeared to show he thought commercial planting of genetically modified crops should be ruled out for years. We're joined right now by two people to talk about the letter and to talk about genetically engineered foods and the battle against them in Europe. Dr. Eric Brunner joins us from London, senior lecturer on epidemiology at the University College of London, also chair of Genetics Forum, a London-based group that promotes debate on the health implications of biotechnology. And we're joined by Dr. Douglas Parr, campaign director for Greenpeace UK. Dr. Parr, let's begin with you. Can you just overall lay out for us the battle over the issue of biotechnology today in Britain?
Yes, well, what's happening at the moment is that there's a very strong consumer-driven or citizen-driven pressure for companies to avoid using genetically modified products in their brands, in their processed foods. And this has led to all the major supermarkets and almost all the major food processors deciding that they're simply not going to use them. So names like, which may not be familiar with your listeners, people like Tesco, Sainsbury's, Asda, these are the supermarkets who have avoided it, and some names that will be familiar, like Unilever and Nestle, have chosen to avoid using these all genetically modified ingredients. Now, in comparison, the government is still trying to sort a way through this because they remain in a situation where they don't want to annoy the voters, but at the same time feel that they need to be trying to promote genetically modified foods, but it's just not working.
Can you tell us about a letter that came out of the British government? What is this?
Yes, well, as I said, the government is struggling with because it clearly wants to push this technology, and what this leaked letter has demonstrated is that inside the UK government, there is what's called a biotechnology presentation group, which is to push the government line about genetically modified foods being very good and acceptable and so on. Now, in this leak, it would appear that the government is trying to line up third parties and, quotes, independent scientists to appear on Premier public affairs programs to push the government line and to author pieces to appear in newspapers and generally to help what we would call spin the argument in their favor by a process of manipulation to so that the media are more en song with what they want the public to be hearing.
Why is the Blair government so interested in pushing biogenetically engineered food?
I think there are a number of reasons. One is that they feel under pressure from the US to do this. Secondly, they feel that they're in some difficulty with the with doing anything other than doing what the WTO, the World Trade Organization, would want them to do. And thirdly, they have an ideological approval or agreement with biotechnology because they think that it's new, it's precise, it's something that is like the knowledge economy, which is a buzz phrase around at the moment about how we are as a nation are going to compete economically with other developing countries. It's the knowledge economy, whilst simultaneously not realizing the uncertainties, the unpredictabilities, the risks, etc., of this new technology.
We're also joined on the phone by Dr. Eric Bruner. Can you talk about the specific issue of bovine growth hormone? In the United States, it's everywhere, I guess you could say. It's in a lot of milk. People often do not know about the fact that the cows that give them the milk are injected with bovine growth hormone, which is produced by Monsanto but banned in Europe. First, can you talk about what it is and what is going on in Britain with it right now?
Well, bovine growth hormone is a protein hormone produced by modified organisms which are owned by Monsanto and a couple of other biotech companies. This product has been around for more than 10 years, but it was only in 1994 that it got approval from the FDA in America. Now there is some concern in Europe that this product is going to be approved for use in European dairy cows. And it's interesting that whereas something like 13,000 dairy farmers in America are using it, that the Canadians have decided not to allow commercial approval. So we see here that there can be very different attitudes to the products of biotechnology. There is no doubt in my mind that bovine growth hormone is potentially problematic in human health terms, and there is certainly good evidence that bovine growth hormone causes health problems in the cows themselves. And what happens is that the cows, because they are being pushed so hard to produce a high milk output, get problems with their udders, with their teats, and they get a disease called mastitis, which can be fatal. Now, the way that mastitis is treated is to use antibiotics, and so therefore we get into this vicious cycle where intensive agriculture requires the use of more drugs, and those drugs may cut across human health concerns. So, in terms of the democratic argument, the question is, which road are we going to go down? Which progress are we going to choose? Are we going to choose a technological progress which will require us to use technological fixes, to use more drugs such as antibiotics, or are we going to say, some kinds of technology offer distinct advantages, whereas other kinds of technology are dubious in their benefit to the consumer? And that really lies at the heart of the European and particularly the British reaction towards this juggernaut of food biotechnology.
Dr. Brenner, can you say why you think that bovine growth hormone injected into cows is harmful to human health when humans drink their milk?
Well, there are a number of reasons why recombinant bovine growth hormone is potentially a problem for human health. The first is that BGH causes an increase in the levels of a hormone called insulin-like growth factor. And this hormone may produce cell proliferation in the guts of humans, and in particular babies who drink BGH milk. The second one is that the antibiotics, which are used for treating or preventing infection in dairy cows who are given BGH, will enter the food chain and may cause problems with antibiotic resistance, which will affect the ability of doctors to cure infections in humans. So those are really the two main problems.
And then can you address the issue of hormone-injected beef? That has been a big battle now. The U.S. Trade Representative, Charlene Barshefsky, has been pummeling the European Union through the World Trade Organization to lift the ban on this beef. First of all, I assume then we have it here. There's been a ban on it in Europe for, 10 years now. What is it?
The ban on the import of hormone beef into the European Union is one that has been going on for 10 years, and the Europeans feel that on balance they want to be able to eat beef which has been produced on pastures using less intensive forms of agriculture. Now, the World Trade Organization regime says that a government or a European Union, for example, can only object to the import of a food product if there is evidence of a public health problem. And so we do not have the opportunity to refuse to import the beef on the basis purely of public values, of preferences. So what has happened is that the European Union has turned to the health consideration, and the argument, quite legitimately, is that there is some evidence that the hormones that are used in the beef may have human health effects, and we don't want to expose our population needlessly to steroid hormones, which, of course, do have biological activity and may be linked with cancer and other health problems potentially. So that's the situation. My personal view is that the health risk is not tiny, it's not vanishingly small, but on the other hand, I think that really we should in Europe have a right to be able to choose which kinds of foods to import in terms of the way in which they're produced, and not only on public health grounds. So, for example, we also have a trade dispute about bananas, and there's an issue there about who benefits from the banana trade.
We're talking to Dr. Eric Brenner and Dr. Douglas Parr. Dr. Eric Brenner, senior lecturer on epidemiology at the University College of London, also chair of Genetics Forum, a London-based group promotes debate on the health implications of biotechnology. And Dr. Douglas Parr, campaign director for Greenpeace UK. Well, on the issue of Britain and the debate around biotechnology, Dr. Douglas Parr, you have been an active participant in campaigning against the government's acceptance of it. In fact, you were involved with an action a couple months ago that we reported on, and that was the dumping of how many soybeans in front of Tony Blair's residence at 10 Downing Street?
It was about 4 tons.
And what was your purpose then?
Our purpose in doing that was to show to the Prime Minister, who we think is actually responsible for the governmental attitude in the UK towards this material to show him that it was this material was everywhere, it was coming into the country, and that actually, as we put it at the time, he was one of the few people left in the country who was prepared to eat it. Rather picking up on the point that Dr. Brunner made a few moments ago about people being able to choose what they want to have, and on the basis not simply of a rather narrow and focused scientific concern, but on a broader concern about the processes by which this food is produced, with in many cases, the attendant uncertainties and unknowns in terms of how that will affect public health and the environment.
Genetically engineered corn is another issue. BT corn, I think it's called. A study was just recently completed at Cornell University showing that butterflies died as a result of touching its pollen. Can you explain what's happening there, and has this had an effect in Britain?
Yeah. Monsanto, Novartis, and Pioneer are producing this BT variety of soy, and it was believed that the modification to the maize genome would result in the destruction only of undesirable insects. But of course, our perceptions and our fantasy wishes for magic bullets don't quite match up to the reality of nature. The problem is that the beautiful monarch butterfly is also an insect, and it seems from this research that the genetically modified maize does severely reduce the population of the monarch butterfly. And I think it's studies like that which demonstrate just how important it is to test these crop modifications. The scientists who work for Monsanto and for the other companies who are manufacturing these novel products tell us about the benefits. It's in their interest to understand the benefits, and it's not particularly in their interest to understand the risks. And so here we have, if you like, a kind of democratic problem, which is how do we obtain technical expertise in the approval process, which knows enough about what's going on, about the products and processes, but which is not, that expertise is not influenced by the financial interests which dominate in the field of biotechnology.
Which brings me to the last point, Dr. Douglas Parr. How powerful is Monsanto in Britain?
Monsanto is as powerful as the products that it markets and the ways in which it is able to market them. Now, that's an answer that doesn't really help very much. I think that what we do know is that they have been to see ministers not infrequently, probably a lot more frequently than the environmental groups have been able to have done so in order to push their case. Now, what was said at those meetings is not a matter of public record, and we can only speculate about it. What we do know is that increasingly the British government is finding itself isolated against the concerns of not just environmental groups, but against consumer groups, food groups, the retail trade, and even the first medical group to look at this, the issue of genetic modification, that's the British Medical Association. So there is a very large grouping, I also forgot development groups, people who are concerned about the welfare and well-being of developing countries.
Dr. Douglas Parr, Campaign Director for Greenpeace UK, and Dr. Eric Brunner, Senior Lecturer on Epidemiology at the University College of London, also Chair of Genetics Forum, a London-based group that promotes debate on the health implications of biotechnology, both speaking to us from London, England. And that does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion and David Love. Our headlines editor is Michael Eid. Errol Maitland is our technical director. From the studios of WBAI in New York, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!